Tune in as author and publisher Joshua Schmoody and renowned talk show host Susan Brinder interview authors, artists, business entrepreneurs, political activists, musicians, and academics to discuss what it means to live the high life. A life of total abundance, joy, passion, and fulfillment. A life where your dreams become realities through the empowering medium of knowledge. Learn something new from book publishing and product distribution, public relations, to politics, psychology, and philosophy. If real-world knowledge interests you, then tune in and start living your higher life today. Hi, I'm Joshua Schmoody with my co-host, Susan Brinder, and welcome to another episode of High Life, a show where you can start living your best life now through the empowering medium of knowledge. And today we have a very special guest, Mr. Alex Phillips. Mr. Phillips, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how are you doing, Alex?
Great. Pleasure to be on today.
Let me tell you a little bit about Alex, Josh.
Yes.
Alex is currently the president of the American Priority, an organization focused on protecting the First Amendment, which is a very important thing.
Oh, yeah.
Owner of Owner of a rural broadband telecom company, past president of the Wireless ISP Association, husband of father of two boys, and an owner of two dogs, and a cat, and a parakeet, and five chickens. You are an amazing man, Alex. You really love the First Amendment, and I think it would be very important for you to discuss with our audience what is American Priority, your organization.
Well, this American Priority is something that I came up with last year, 2018. I've been in the telecom industry for a long time, and so I have seen how the internet has grown since the 90s till today, and the issue with censorship and how big tech control people's freedom of speech on the internet has been a great concern of me. And so American Priority is sort of the brainchild of that concern. And people ask me, you know, why is it just called American Priority as opposed to priorities? Well, I know a lot of people have a lot of things that they feel are important. And from my perspective, our ability to speak against our government in some cases and talk about issues with other folks and open dialogue and having free association with people that you may not agree with so that you can talk about these things is probably the most important thing that our world faces today. You know, the ability to talk is the number one concern for every relationship. And, you know, our relationship today with our government is probably, you know, one of the most important things that we need to get fixed.
Yeah, right. You know, I'll tell you something, Alex, and I'll tell you something, Josh, the same thing that he was talking about with the importance of the First Amendment. I did an interview, if you can believe this, with Larry Flint. Now, do you guys know who Larry Flint is?
I'm not familiar.
Well, Larry Flint is an author and a magazine. He owns a magazine called The Hustler. Now, people said to me when I decided that I wanted to interview, they said to me, you know what, Susan, why would you want to interview a guy who deals with porno? And the reason that I did it is because freedom
that
of
Larry
speech.
Flint.
Yeah, that
okay,
Larry
Okay, yeah, now I know what you're talking about. Okay, go
That's
ahead.
That's right. And you know something? It was very important that I let him speak because he said to me, I know that people hate me because, you know, what I do, but people line up to get into my magazine, and I want people to understand that I'm allowed to speak out, to say what I feel is important, and that's part of the First Amendment. So I interviewed him, and it was fascinating to learn how he thought. Well, now, go ahead.
Oh, and Alex, I had a question too, just kind of on that same topic. What do you think the role technology is playing in our communication, you know, with the whole anti-bullying campaigns and the social media shaming for people, you know, who may be saying things that or just what they have on their mind. I mean, what do you see the role being of technology and how we communicate with each other? Because I've noticed it seems like the more technology we have, the more distant people seem to be from like a personal communication. They're so used to texting their thoughts rather than actually speaking face to face to somebody and, you know what I'm saying, showing those emotions. So what do you think the role technology is playing in that?
Well, the internet is probably this planet's most powerful invention. You know, the ability to connect people in a way that, you know, using technology and telecommunications is probably been more powerful than anything that man has invented, more powerful than bombs and jets and guns and rockets or whatever you want to call, you know, any kind of achievement. Is because it allows one person with their smartphone to talk to the world. And never in history has that ever been the case. I mean, you know, right. there's never been a situation like that when one person can speak to the entire planet from, you know, wherever they are.
Right.
And so in one aspect, technology has been a really great enabler for people to talk about things. So now I can talk about something that's going on in my little, you know, narrow focused war, a part of the world, and other people that have their own issues and their own perceptions and perspectives can hear what I have to say, share from their perspective what they think. And I can also hear, you know, from lots of other people. And so on that side of the things, that's been a really great tool for all of us to learn more about, you know, this planet, learn more about our country, learn more about what's going on in different parts of the world. But there's been this issue with, you know, using technology in a way that is not necessarily, I guess, called equitable. And it kind of stems from the whole concept of if it's legal, then it's okay to do business mentality, which is now morphed into if it's so complicated you can't prove that I did it, then it's okay to do it too. And that's what we are in today, is that, you know, I'm amazed. I just uploaded some videos from our conference, and I was a little bit amazed at how quickly they were able to scan through the entire video and identify every time we used a copyrighted video or a copyrighted song or, you know, something like that. I mean, so instantaneously they knew this type of stuff, which, you know, I don't have a problem with that per se. You know, people's copyrights, people's, you know, rights to be protected of what they produce. I have no problem with that. I just was amazed at how quickly the technology was able to do that. And now we've seen,
right,
you know, that you can in real time censor people's content based on what they said, even if they're speaking it on a video. They just have the ability to do that. And so I'm, and being a service provider, I see kind of both sides of this coin. I've seen what's been going on over history with regulations and laws. And I think that, you know, the public is a lot to blame. You know, we've enabled these companies to take our power and use it for their, you know, financial benefit. And in exchange, we get, you know, we get a little endorphin boost, you know, on a daily basis because we know, you know, what our uncle is doing at the cabin, or we see the grandkids playing live, or, you know, this and that. You know, we get to share stuff that's funny and exciting, and it gets us all pumped up. And we feel like we're more social now, but we're also a lot different. We're all distant, like you said. And, you know, the philosophy is, you know, don't ever say anything that you wouldn't say to somebody, you know, don't ever say anything to somebody that you wouldn't say to them to their face. And I think we've gotten away from that. People are, you know, are saying things online that are, you know, not very nice. People are making associations. I know that, you know, I've been referred to as a misogynist, a Nazi, you know, just go through the whole narrative list.
Right.
And I asked these people when they call me these names, I said, you don't even know who I am. You don't know me. How can you possibly, you know, come to these conclusions based on the fact that I'm a Trump supporter,
right,
or I want to have a conference to talk about free speech and issues that I consider important. So, you know, yeah, I think people have become distant, and they need to remember that, you know, we're all people, we all have feelings, and, you know, but I also, you know, somebody asked me about political correctness. It was actually funny. It was somebody who doesn't even know me, and I was talking to my alarm company because my smoke alarm went off at my house, and he started asking me about what I do, And I told him, you know, I'm in politics reluctantly. And he laughed. And then he started asking me questions about political correctness. And I said, well, you know, I'm not a big advocate of political correctness because I think it hides, you know, our ability to speak freely. But I do believe in people being polite. And, yeah. You know, and I think it's normal. People should be polite with each other. There's no right. reason not to.
Yeah, but you know something, Alex, I have to tell you, people, I just did, and Josh and I actually did an interview with this man by the name of Michael Solomon, who talked about climate control and global warming. And one of the things that I really understood was that people, when they get on the computer, when they go to Wikipedia or one of those sites, they take it for granted that whatever they say on those sites, they're real. They don't really think about science evidence that really is important for a particular subject. All they think about is what the media is saying. And I'll tell you the truth. It is like really scary because they form an opinion based upon what the media says, and the media isn't always right. Now, what do you think about that? And you know what? I'll tell you something, Alex. People don't even, as you said, they don't even know you. So tell us about your background, because you got involved in this American Priority. And, you know, the question is why? So I would like to know a little bit about you and how you got involved in this politics.
Well, I'll start off by saying I hate politics. I understand politics. I understand the need for politics. Politics is the, you know, there's always two sides or multiple sides to issues. And so you've got to kind of find a way to move forward. I was even talking to a New York public radio journalist at our conference who, needless to say, wrote a terrible story about us. But I was very open and honest with her. And I told her that I think it's important for, you know, in the political world for there to be bipartisanship because, you know, not any one side may have the correct answer for any one issue. And our ability to go left and right and eventually find our way to the center or go forward, perhaps, is important. But, you know, I've been involved in policy a long time. You know, I spent 6 years on the board of directors of the Wireless ISP Association, where I was in D.C. talking to people on the Hill and folks at the FCC regarding policy. And policy is the framework for how our, you know, how things work. You know, they don't just pass a law for everything. They have policies for things. And so our telecom broadband has been a very big issue in our country. People are getting online through their home computers. They're getting online from their phones. And the way that all this happens is based on policies that are set. And so I saw how the sausage was made, so to speak. You know, we had a bill passed in the House 2 years in a row to protect small businesses from undue regulation. I've seen how policies are made at the FCC that can really have an effect on the public. And, you know, when I came to sort of the end of my tenure at WISPA, I decided to, you know, expand into this larger world and focus on freedom of speech based on my perspective. And my perspective is from technology, the world of technology, which is why everybody is communicating. People live, people work, they have relationships, they just start businesses, you know, they interact. You know, it's not that we're, you know, doomed because of the technology. We are going to be part of it. It's making our world bigger and better.
Definitely.
But the problem is that, you know, things are starting to happen so fast and things happen and people don't understand them. And I come back to the foundation of all things civilized, and that's the social contract. The social contract is sort of this non-written contract that exists that civilization is based on. I give up part of me so that I can be governed. And this governed society, then everybody's playing along the same rules. So there's no multi-level of justice, but now we see that, you know, there is a separate tier of justice depending on who you are. There are different tiers in the financial world depending on who you are.
Yes.
So we've seen all these this degradation of the social contract, that where I give up part of me to be governed, I give up part of me to have a bank account, I give up part of me to be on social media. And now everybody's sort of taking advantage of that and wrecking the whole process. And if you look at just historically, since the 60s, the Pew Trust did a study about this not too long ago. You know, trust in government is down to 17% as of last year. And I would say that it's probably a lot lower today than it's ever been. And so, you know, I suspect when it gets to a certain point, if the trust of, in our government and the social contract drops to a certain point, I think we'll be in what's called anarchy. And there won't be anymore.
Alex, one thing I wanted
civilization.
I wanted to point out, because this is kind of an issue dear to me, but I've looked at it more from the war on drugs. You know, I grew up poor, Section 8 housing. I saw and I've experienced the impact of that war and what's happened and how it's ravaged communities in many respects, and offering a form of justice that, in my opinion, is worse than the drug addiction itself. And it creates this unregulated environment where you've got, you know, heroin laced with fentanyl, God knows what else, and it's just people are dropping dead that don't have to drop dead if we just treat this like a medical issue instead of a criminal one. But besides that, it seems that we have no say. The average working American has no say, or maybe even doesn't have the time to look into, because some of these bills can be thousands of pages long. No say in the formation of these policies that they're being sort of, for lack of a better word, forced to obey. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, on a representative democracy, sort of the drawbacks of this representative democracy, where the representatives that are supposed to represent you seemingly don't represent you, but represent whoever has the most money to, you know, throw at them, if you will. Well, I mean, what would you say to that?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, nobody has time. In fact, one of my biggest gripes is that I would like to get back to being able to watch the news and trust it.
Right.
I don't want to have to second guess it. I don't have to be a fact checker. I don't want to have to constantly do this. And that's the same thing with bills. You know, you see examples. There's two examples that I can talk to you about. You know, one is the, you know, Affordable Care Act, and the other one was net neutrality. Mm. So everybody in the country kind of has the idea that, you know, if it says it's the Affordable Care Act, that means it's supposed to be more affordable health care. Well, ever since then, my health care doubled almost every year. Cost, you know, the
right.
cost kept going up,
right.
And I also see, you know, net neutrality. It was the other thing that, because that's technology, and that wasn't anything to do with what they said it was. It was has to do with limiting competition. You know, all these things. We have to be able to get back to trusting our representatives. And so, yeah, you know, I don't want to have to know what's in a bill. I want my representative to represent me, and not just me, but the people that didn't vote for him as well. You
right.
know, I want him to represent everybody. And I think that money and power in politics has gotten out of control. I think that the, you know, the concept that, you know, people do with these things called focus groups, you know, identity politics, you know, all these things combined, they've lost their way. You know, the purpose of representing me and me electing you in government was so that you would represent me and do what's in the best interest of me. And everybody in your constituency, and may not be, I may not agree with 100% of you, what you know what you do, but I still think that the focus was to represent. And now it's all about, well, what can I say to this group to get them to vote for me, and what can I say to that group to get them to vote to me?
Demagogues.
And you know, the whole concept of. And this is kind of ironic too, because this is, you know, this is one of the things that they talk about with President Trump. You know, he said he was going to do ABC. We elected him to do these
right.
things. And now that he's doing these things, the other side is like all crazy about the fact that he's doing what he said he was going to do, because it's never done. You know, nobody does what they say they're going to do anymore in politics.
Mm.
And everybody has gotten to the point where, well, you know, I'm just like, you know, politicians always lie. I even had a discussion with my wife. This was during 16 election. And, you know, Paul Ryan said something on some kind of a political debate. And she said, well, I agree with what he says. And then she said, but he might have just been saying that because that's what I wanted to hear. And I said, bingo.
Right.
You know, you can't trust these people. And that's why this government, that's why trust in government is just going spiraling down. And it's a really big problem. And I think that the media is not helping. I think that,
right.
you know, establishment politicians on both sides are not helping. And I think we need to, you know, have a come to Jesus meeting, so to speak, and have a realization that it's time to go back to some, you know, old concepts of, you know, representing the public and doing what's right and not what's right for the people paying for your election.
You know, Alex, that's an interesting point. What I think is really something that the audience ought to know is that there are three things that make people do what they do. And I'm talking about political people, like even Trump. Aren't they there to get reelected? And isn't it all about money? And in the case of the media, isn't it all about ratings? You know, people need good quality information, and they need to understand what's going on in politics and how the political landscape is changing. And if they don't understand that, all they just listen to is just the same thing over and over again by the media, which grabs them and makes them listen no matter what. And that is just something that I think is just a travesty. Now, what is your view of the political landscape right now? Because you are involved in so much, and I want people in our audience to understand what the political landscape from your point of view is.
Well, you know, like I said before, I think that, you know, a lot of politicians that are in power today are just focused on maintaining that position, because without that political power, they have nothing. And that's really unfortunate, because I'm sure a lot of these people have some skills to do other things that would be productive in society. But regardless, you know, it's all about maintaining that control of power, because the power they have in Congress is ultimately, you know, to spend money. I mean, if you think about it, you know, you make a regulation on appropriation, you make a law that either results in someone having to pay a licensing fee or some type of additional cost. It all results in money being spent one way or another. You know, and this thing about climate change, I am nowhere near being a climate expert. So, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody that I think climate change is a big hoax. But what I do know, because I saw it on Discovery Channel, is, and a lot of scientists told me, is that, you know, over the millennia, our climate has gone from hot to cold. We have the ice age. You know, there was a bunch of cartoon movies about it. You know, obviously, the climate changes back and forth on this planet. And they've got, you know, all kinds of data that shows that. And I think that what I've seen is that somebody decided this was a great opportunity to make money, because if we put fear in the public, and that's another thing that politicians do, is they use fear. You know, if you don't vote for me, then you should fear what the outcome would be. That's basically the message that they say. And, you know, Donald Trump is doing the same thing. He's saying, you know, you should fear that the economy will get worse if you don't elect me. Well, you know, he may be right, he may be wrong, but regardless, you know, fear is never, in my opinion, a very good motivator, or should be a motivator for people, because people should never make decisions based on emotions, and fear is an emotion.
That's propaganda.
But
though,
I think that, yeah, and I think that, you know, so I think that politicians and some people think that term limits and fiscal responsibility are two key points. There's this whole group of our organization called Convention of States, which, you know, a lot of politicians on both sides don't like, because they don't want to have term limits, right? I've heard politicians on the right speak to their base and say they're completely against term limits because, and I quote, "I don't want them to take my power away," and that's what they say.
Right.
You know, and
I
can understand it. There's no incentive for me as a politician to enable my power to be taken away. So why would I want to do it? But, you know, I think that we're going to have to do it somehow, because the politicians won't do it themselves.
Right.
And that's on both sides of the aisle. I mean, I've listened to C-SPAN radio, and I've heard, you know, they got the Republican phone, the Democrat phone, and inevitably, you know, both phones say the same thing about term limits and fiscal responsibility. I think the average person today in this country who has to spend their own money to buy food, to pay for housing, to pay for their kids' college, understands the concept of spending within your means. They all, I mean, I do. I know when I go outside that envelope, bad things happen. You know, I get, overdraft notices. I get bills, not paid, bad things happen. But in our government, they have there's no recourse. You know, they can spend more money. They can appropriate more money. They can make more money out of thin air. It doesn't really affect them. And they're just doing what they do. But, I think that, I think our political landscape is very detached from the public. I think we're very detached from reality. I think that, people use fear to motivate people. I think people are not honest in general when it comes to politics. And I don't like the spin.
Calvin Coolidge ran on the slogan, Coolidge or chaos. Coolidge or chaos.
Exactly.
So, I mean, we see these same tactics used over and over again. And when I read Aristotle's Politics, it really woke me up to government in general and the sort of cyclical process that government seems to play in history. And, really, Alex, I think what we're dealing with is the same thing the ancients were dealing with and couldn't find a solution to, and that is the Polybian cycle. The government starting as rule by the one, going to rule by the few, then rule by the many, and back to rule by the one again. It seems to be this eternal recurrence, if you will. I don't know if you're familiar with that cyclical process or not, but maybe you could say a few things about that process and what you think some solutions are to our current dilemma.
Well, any type of situation where the public relies on the status quo to move forward, like the politician said that he would put, food in my cupboard and money in my pocket, and I elected him on that basis, and then nothing happened, and then I voted for somebody else next. If people keep believing everything they say and don't follow up when things don't work out the way they say, then, we get what we get. And that comes back to the free speech. All right. So we are now in a world where the internet enables people to, like yourselves, to now, start broadcasting. You're bypassing all of the obstacles that are there today. That if you're in print media, the obstacle would be the cost to print enough media. If you're in radio, the obstacle is to buy a radio station. If you're in TV, to be a TV broadcaster or cable and so on and so forth. You have bypassed all these things, and all those people that were in charge and in control of all those things are really, really scared about this. I mean, it's very clear. The CNNs of the world, the ABCs of the world, they held dominance. So, your message couldn't get out unless they allowed it to go out. Now, Google, same thing. And let me tell you, Google is bigger than CBS. Google is a $136 billion company. So they're the same thing. So they are now, before they were leveraging you and you're saying something and they put it on their search engine and now people want to find it. Look at that. My phone is like listening to me because I said, okay, Google. Let me turn that off. So now people have this ability to bypass all these obstacles to talk about this. So now we can talk about, hey, wait a minute. My healthcare did go up, and wait a minute. So now, and 1,000 other people are saying the same. 10,000. Wait a minute. Now 100,000. Wait a minute. Half the country is saying the same thing. Nobody's talking about that on the news, but yet all these people are getting online and talking about it. And so they're bypassing these people. And I think that's a wonderful thing. But then all of a sudden, boom. Wait a minute. That's not good. We can't let that happen. We have a relationship with these. Google has a relationship with these media companies, and they have to be in sync with each other. Otherwise, it all comes crashing down.
Alex, why do people hate Trump so much? All I hear when I go around, and I have to be honest with you, is that people say to me, how could you have any feelings towards Trump? He's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's saying. He's saying things that are not true. Why do people, from your point of view, there must be a reason that people think that. And I'd love to know, because you've been involved with him. You've heard him. You know what he says. You're probably involved in some way with him. Why? Why do they hate him?
I have a lot of people that are, I would call, conservative Republicans. And some of them are or what they call your never Trumpers. And I'll have conversations with them and they just echo narrative concepts. And I didn't really understand, you know, because I'm not affected by the media. Why are they being affected by the media? And so I did a talk during the summertime at an event where I had to do some research on this, this issue. And I don't think the public really grasps how much power the mainstream media has over them right now. Right. You look at Fox, they have a significant portion of the market share now, but then you got, literally 50% of the news and information we get comes over satellite, cable, or OTA, off the air, over the air television.
Right.
I mean, it's half the country gets their information. So most people, and I have relatives that are solid Trump supporters, solid conservative voters, but will say, I wish he wouldn't tweet so much, or I wish he wouldn't talk about that, or I wish he wouldn't do this, or I wish he wouldn't. And I say to them, well, I wish we didn't live in a world that he had to do that. I wish we lived in a world that he could let his press secretary, talk about stuff like, the old days. I wish the news would report things fairly and unbiased. I wish all these things, but we don't have those things. So he's got to do what he's got to do to get the message out. And so, the media has a tremendous influence over the average public. Mm. I would say that you and I, the three of us are not the average public. We do our own homework. We do our own research. We know people. Right. We know things that are going on. But the average person turns on the news and they hear, all this negativity about Donald Trump and the Ukraines and how he's missed. And everything they say is a perception or a biased opinion, not a fact. And that's what the wrong with the news. So now they're saying that he did this, he did that. And that's why you see these T-shirts showing up, read the transcripts. Because,
right.
When it comes to this, just to focus on one thing, the Ukraine issue was an issue of the president of our country talking to the president or leader of another country and supposedly leveraging his power as president of the United States over this other country with money or power or something to get him to do something politically. And it's right there in the transcript. It didn't happen. In fact, the guy hadn't even admitted to it. But yet the media covers all these extraneous opinions. And so I'll talk to my friend and she'll say, well, he's picking on Joe Biden. Joe Biden didn't do anything. And I was like, didn't you see Joe Biden on TV admitting that he'd actually did all these things? No, I didn't see that.
Right. Yeah, I think we should do another show in the future about the CIA's role in the media and talking points. Just being an author and having to do everything press-wise myself, I kind of understand how the media works from a certain perspective. And I don't think a lot of people realize how media gets their news stories and the spin and the angles that they use. And, it would take, most people don't want to read these types of things. They want to be entertained. So therefore they kind of get led by the nose by anyone who's willing to lead them, I guess, if you will. But fascinating, Alex, fascinating stuff. Susan, Alex, yeah. We are running out of time. So if there's anything you want to say, Alex, any last words you want to say to people, what can they do what should people do to become more aware? What do you think are some tips or advice that we can use going into the future to kind of take the system back and have it actually represent us again?
Well, I always, I suggest that, everybody use common sense. Generally, if it's too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true and not. Don't retweet everything that you see. Take a moment, think about it. Even if it's, exactly what you want to believe, it may not be the truth. So I always say that to people, be cautious about what you retweet, because you don't want to spread false rumors. I've been caught doing that because it was something I wanted to believe, and all of a sudden, oh my God, I had to delete it because I was wrong. So I've been very cautious, and I think that don't let people bully you. Don't react to people's negative opinions about you just because you're a Trump supporter. There's a lot of people out there that, are Trump supporters and and are just normal people. Like, that's why I said in my bio, you know, I'm just a guy. I'm a married man. I got two boys. You know, I got two dogs. I got a bird. I got a cat. I got chickens. You know, I'm not a multi-billion-dollar, you know, person that is a leader of, you know, everybody should listen to me. I'm just a normal guy like everybody else. I got to pay my bills. You know, I got to live within my means, and that's how it works.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I want to say to our audience that we've really been very interested in what you have to say, because it sounds like the truth. And as the president of the American Priority, an organization focused on protecting the First Amendment, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. And if people want to speak to you, if people want to know a little bit more about your attitude about the Trump administration or anything else in politics, how did they get in touch with you?
Well, our Twitter handle is AmericanP2019, which will be changing for 2020 soon, but you can also get me on Twitter at AlexPHSL as well. And I do, you know, get my DMs. It's open. So as long as you're polite to me, I'll be polite to you.
So Josh, what do you think about this guest that we had?
Oh, I think it was great. I think we should have you back on again sometime soon, Alex. Maybe talk a little bit more about the media and, you know, how the media works. Because a lot of people, I don't think, know this. And I think they should know this type of stuff. So that way they won't be so trusting whenever they come out with this news story and parrot it like it's, you know, God's truth. So definitely, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
It'd be my pleasure to come back again soon.
Good deal.
Thank you very much.
Okay, guys, so thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of High Life. Remember, knowledge is power. You guys take it easy and take care, okay?
The High Life show and media by which it is distributed hold no responsibility for the validity or accuracy of information on this site. Listeners and viewers are advised to seek the input of a professional whom represent the subject before acting on any information or advice. The High Life show and media by which it is distributed hold no responsibility for the validity or accuracy of information on this site or podcast. Listeners and viewers are advised to seek the input of a professional whom represents the subject before acting on any information or advice. Thank you.